Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Alves. Joining me in the dugout, my pal Brian Svensson.
Hey, hi, howdy.
On the bullpen phone, my pal Chris Zook.
Let's get it going.
And special guests today down at the end of the bench, chewing seeds, I believe is what he said, Bobby Wagner.
That's what I spent most of my playing days doing anyway. Got really good at it, guys. Got really good at chewing seeds.
And Alex Baisley said he's in the crowd yelling up at the field.
Howdy, y'all. I'm here to heckle you throughout the course of this recording.
So Alex and Bobby collectively are the hosts of the Tipping Pitches podcast, which Brian and I have been singing the praises of on this show for ages, particularly over this last period of the CBA ABCs that they did. And of course, with no baseball looking imminent anytime soon, it's the perfect time to have them on to talk about why exactly that is. So welcome to the two of you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having us. This is a lot of fun to come on here. I know that we've been chatting for multiple years now, just back and forth on Twitter, but it's nice to kind of put some voices to some faces.
Well, we've also been joking for years about making our foray into the radio sphere. So this feels like a good first step.
This is it. Onto an existing radio show before then launching your own radio show
in Kansas City, right? That was the original destination that you guys were looking for airspace on.
It was Topeka, Kansas.
Topeka.
Oh. Yeah.
Which I don't know why that was the first kind of Midwestern city that I thought of when I was doing this running bit. Alex and I have a lot of really terrible running bits on the podcast, but you know, I was doing a fake sports radio rant and I was like, you know, for the loyal listeners of Topeka, Kansas, this is my sports radio voice.
Bobby, I hope you're not being disparaging of that. I have a nephew who lives there and it's a fine city in America.
No, not being disparaging at all. More so that was the first place that I thought of, which I think is
Heartland.
A testament.
Well,
to
it is. It is the capital of Kansas. So yes, that is fantastic.
That's right.
It is. And let me just tell you, they have some good barbecue out there.
I'll bet.
Really do.
Possibly they had some good barbecue left on the table today. We're recording this on Thursday, and the MLBPA met for a scant 15 minutes. Probably not even enough time to have like the cornbread that comes with the barbecue.
I was going to say that this show is going to be longer than what they were in for negotiations today.
That's true.
It's not going to be a season. There's not going to be a season. I've been telling you guys for weeks. It's not happening.
Bobby or Alex, please.
Pregnant
Brian.
Pause.
He's wrong.
I'll let Alex go because he's been kind of the optimist among us. Nice. On the podcast.
Yeah, I don't know that I have a much of an optimistic answer. I mean, at best, we'll probably miss a couple weeks of the season, but it does seem to be more and more in jeopardy in totality as we speak.
Can I ask a question right off the bat here? Why are they meeting if they're only meeting for 15 minutes? Like, why even do that?
Yeah.
I don't even understand.
Yeah. So it's a really good question. I will say the length of the meeting has nothing to do with how productive the meeting. So the way that collective bargaining negotiations go is that one side passes a proposal back to the other side. Sometimes that is a proposal for the entire collective bargaining agreement, which is what MLB passed back, I believe, last Saturday, as we sit here to record this on a Thursday. Sometimes it is smaller portions of that proposal, but essentially that time frame, as it's being reported by, you know, the Passins, the Drellicks, those folks who are covering the CBA negotiations, that time frame is just the amount of time that it takes for them to come to the table, say, here's our document. Do you have any questions about this document? And the other side will say, yes, I have a question about X, or no, we have to deliberate, or we have to caucus is what it's called in collective bargaining negotiations. And then they go back to their respective sides. And it takes a really long time to read over proposals because they are very detailed. And every single word of this matters, because once you put something back across the table, you can't change it, legally speaking. So that is what is happening there. It's just one side passing it to the other side and the other side saying, we need the rest of the day to look over this, so we're not going to meet again today. So actually the length of time that they're bargaining or negotiating, quote unquote, is not really that big of a red flag to me.
15 minutes is better than no minutes, I guess, though.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I think,
is that where we're at? Is that where we're at? That, like, I mean, that's a low bar here right now. Like,
the amount of days that it takes between sessions is more of a red flag in terms of like the season calendar than mm-hmm. the actual amount of time that they're quote unquote negotiating. Cause no real change happens in that 15 minutes at the table. It's all like, once you leave the table and go back and discuss amongst your own side, that's when the change actually happens. That's when moves get made.
Yeah. We're getting dangerously close to where spring training would start. Pitchers and catchers already would have reported under a normal schedule, right? So the fact that we're already missing like proper baseball days, that's alarming too.
But there is something. I mean, and when they had the COVID season in 2020, they had a pretty shortened spring training. I mean, they don't.
We all know how that worked out.
Sure, fair enough. But I'm just saying is, that. Yeah, they if they want to fit in a season, they can do that. The way I was reading it this week, it just seems like the players are pretty it seems like they're still pretty far apart. Like there's a lot of animosity between both sides. Am I reading this totally wrong, or is there something out there that should be more optimistic as Alex is?
I mean, I think that the players are standing kind of headfast in their position because the owners haven't made a lot of really significant concessions in places that it actually matters, right? In places like the competitive balance tax, for example. And the players, actually, to their credit, I think it was in the most recent session, made significant moves on things like, Super 2 players kind of reaching arbitration. So I think that the players are actually in a pretty good position right now and are waiting for the owners to actually come back to them with a serious proposal, right? I mean, they are each kind of moving an inch in each direction, but the players, it sounds like, are willing to hold out as long as it takes.
What right. would a win for the players look like in that circumstance then? Like what exactly are they really looking for that would be heralded as a huge union win?
So I think there are three elements to what the players were trying to accomplish with this round of bargaining, and the extent to which that they will be able to accomplish them, it really depends. We don't have like the answers to those yet, but you know, they will also be trying to accomplish these three things for time eternity. Like the next CBA, they will be trying to get these same three things, and potentially like unforeseen problems that arise over the course of this CBA that we're currently negotiating. But the three things are, they want teams to be more competitive. They don't want to like incentivize losing, basically financially incentivize losing for teams. Cause right now it's really profitable to be the Pittsburgh Pirates and spend $40 million on payroll and then cash revenue sharing checks, and have your franchise value still go up no matter what, no matter how few tickets you sell, no matter how few wins you get. The other thing that the players are trying to accomplish is getting younger players paid more earlier in their career, because I think service time manipulation has been a gigantic problem over the course of this last CBA, and it's sped up faster than I think the Players Association was really ready for. As kind of like the empirical revolution of baseball has happened so quickly since, you know, 2005 or so. Now every team is understanding that the value that young players provide on the salary that they're on is so much higher than older players. And then I think the third kind of head of that thing that the union is trying to accomplish is raise the competitive balance tax. Stop getting owners and teams to stop treating it like a hard salary cap. And they're receiving a lot of pushback on all three of those, but especially that last one.
But why not? What I read a little bit too is, but why aren't they going for the floor? Because you gave the example about the Pirates or the Marlins or any team that's in the bottom that just, they don't care about competitiveness and they make a ton of money, but it seems like they're not going for the floor. Is that correct? Like they want the CBA to go up instead of negotiating to have the floor go up so that they force teams to spend some money?
I mean, I do think that if there was to be a salary floor, that would kind of come with a salary cap. Like that's the only way I think the owners would really agree to that sort of thing. And I think the players want at all costs to stay away from that right now. Obviously, with revenues, going through the roof.
I think an important thing to understand about the MLB Players Association is that it was essentially founded on the principle that there should never be a salary cap in baseball. Like, and Marvin Miller, that was like Marvin Miller to his dying bed, was like, no salary cap ever here in the sport. That is our thing. That is the union's thing. That is what the strike was over in 1994. The owners lined up hard trying to get a salary cap, and the players said no. And they went into the season without a CBA, and the owners were like, we're not backing off this salary cap idea. And players are like, fine, then we're striking. And they lost a World Series over it. So that is like a very sensitive subject when it comes to labor negotiations in baseball. I think it's something that the owners obviously will try to make a move on at some point. I just think right now is not that point. And so salary floor and salary cap are kind of not really on the table. That is sort of like the winter is coming of baseball labor negotiations.
Right. Mentioning the word salary cap is a nice way to get the players to storm out of the meeting. I think that ends the conversation.
That's fair enough.
With the owners basically treating the competitive balance tax like a salary cap, like a hard cap, how do you think the players should go about, obviously not being labor lawyers yourselves, what do you think how the players should go about changing that so it's not as bad of a barrier?
Yeah, I mean,
that's the question.
That is the sort of like, I think $5 billion question at the table right now. There are a few ways that you can think about it. Like I think conceptually, philosophically at the table, number one is, how do you incentivize teams to win? Like, how do you incentivize spending more and winning to be the thing that actually nets clubs more revenue in the long term, so that money is actually being funneled back to the players on a year-over-year basis, which would lead to, you know, more free agent spending. And we've seen in the last like 5 years, essentially teams have, without maybe colluding over email or over text or over phone calls, they've essentially colluded to not pay players over 31 years old. And sure, I think that incentivizing winning and making it more of a financial incentive to win versus how it is not right now would mean that more teams would take risks to pay those older players, and that would not dry up that market for them. And then the flip side of that coin is, you know, how do you get money into younger players' pockets earlier on? And then that will kind of force teams to raise that floor up a little bit, because the way that you keep salaries down to the levels of like the Pirates and the Rays is you only have pre-arbitration players and you only have to pay them the league minimum. And then also at the same time, they are trying to raise the league minimum league-wide.
Yeah, I mean, there's a really, really good example of how to properly handle young players and their free agencies in two other leagues in North America, in both the NBA and NHL, with how they deal with, you know, their contract starts immediately. Like, as soon as you get drafted and signed, you get 3 years, or in some cases in basketball, it's four, I think, in the NBA. But, you know, and hockey, it's you get 3 years and then you're restricted free agent until you're 27. And I think that's, I mean, it's not obviously the best way of handling it, but it's certainly better than the way that Major League Baseball does. Obviously, I think the owners probably wouldn't go for it, but I think the players would be smart to try and angle for something like that.
But couldn't they negotiate, like, you know, it's a trade-off, right? If the players got something, like, couldn't then the players give them the 14 teams they want in the playoffs instead of the 12 that the players have offered up, right? Like, I mean, that's called, you know, that's the negotiation. But it just, like, to me, like, I think that's where the hill that the players have to stand on is to have that clock started, like, a lot sooner, because it is, it seems we talk about this endlessly on our show here, but, like, just like, as a fan, you're missing out on these young players who are sitting in the minors, like Vladdy Guerrero, Chris Bryan, or you can name
6 days to improve his defense.
You know, it's a joke. It's an affront, I think, to the fan base that they got to sit here and they're playing this charade just because they want to save a couple bucks.
It's not fair to the players that have to, you know, continually exist on minor league salaries too, which are also a joke.
Yeah. I mean, I think today is an interesting day to have this version of this conversation too, because the proposal that we saw MLBPA pass back across the table, you know, one of those things is exactly what you're talking about, Chris. They're trying to get players to arbitration after 2 years. They're trying to get 100% of players to arbitration after they've served 2 years of service time. And that's not what we're talking about with the NBA, where service time is not really a concept, but you're not going to wipe all that off the board in one fell swoop.
Right. Because you have to break it down, right? Like, you have to move, but they have to move it, right? Like, this is
little
the
by
first,
little. Yeah.
You're right. This is the first step of the bigger picture. But if you don't, to me, that's, yeah. I mean, because there is no middle ground now of older players. It's all, they're running it on the cheap, and then other franchises are, I mean, it's just such a crazy concept when you're thinking about, oh, we should have a plan that incentivizes teams to be winning. That's just crazy. You're literally saying, you know, a third of the league is not going to be competitive or even more before we even start the first pitch, and they don't care. And so that is, I think, a bigger issue of this system is broken. If you're a fan, I mean, if you're a fan base of the Pittsburgh Pirates or the Miami Marlins or whatever, like, you got no chance if they ever play baseball in 2022 again, because they're going to field a team of 35 or 40 million players. And, you know, there's going to be, you know, Mike Trout will make that in one season. You know, like,
unfortunately, you've got owners who are more concerned with outperforming the Dow Jones than a commissioner who thinks that the trophy is a piece of metal. So, I mean, clearly winning is not a priority for anyone on that side of the table.
Well, it's an interesting, I mean, we could spend hours talking about this, as we have on Tipping Pitches. And it's interesting how
that's a good plug. I like that.
Natural plug. You know, we've been doing a lot of these in the lockout, but we've spent hours talking about this exact thing, is the evolution of the baseball owner. What do they prioritize? And what they've always prioritized, profit, right? They've always prioritized the bottom line. It's just that back in the day, way back when, before, you know, these TV deals were massive, before you could sell NFTs as MLB, before you could pump your bottom line with sports gambling, like, before all of that stuff, it was actually profitable to win. And now it's not. And the owners know that. And they've capitalized on that fact. Like, there are, you'd be hard pressed to find an owner that would rather, you know, get to the World Series and lose, which is objectively a better outcome, than miss the playoffs and pocket more money. Like, that is just, it's almost like they admit that at this point. And that is a huge challenge for the players, because despite the fact that owners admit that, you still have a whole slew of fans who side with owners because they just think that players are rich and spoiled.
Right. There are these, like, new diversified funding streams that the players are trying to get a piece of the pie of, right? There are hundreds of millions of dollars that are going to owners right now. And I mean, it's unfortunate that kind of as those TV deals unfolded over the last couple decades, that the players didn't put more of an emphasis kind of on these increasing revenues, place more of an emphasis on negotiating for that piece of the pie in the past CBAs. But I don't know. It's somewhat heartening that they have drawn such a hard line on these topics, you know, like as much as it would pain me to have an entire year without baseball, like that would be incredibly worth it, dare I say, right? I can stomach college baseball for a year.
Yeah.
If they manage to like burn it down and build it back up again,
yeah,
in a way that the MLBPA would like, right? Like, because
but if it doesn't,
if we miss a whole year and get marginal changes,
it's like 94.
It's a bummer.
Yeah. See, like,
I think that we are not going to lose an entire baseball season is because I think that the players have moved on enough stuff that holding the line and losing an entire year is not worth it for either side at this point. Like, this proposal is not transformative, like a phoenix being reborn in the ashes. Like, from what we've gotten, like, these are marginal changes that the owners should consider themselves lucky to have to give in order to continue to profit off baseball the way that they have, you know, in my view, immorally profited off baseball in the last 20 years.
I think we largely agree here. Yeah. Yeah.
But the only thing is, like, because we've talked about this before, is that I don't understand is that if the owners, where's the incentive for them to, they could, if the players keep making offers, no. But they know it's still going to be there. Like, they're going to just sit this out. They're going to wait a month or two into it, and they'll know that the players will cave. Like, I mean, that's kind of what's happened over in the past a bit. And it's the owners who, it's just one commodity that they have of a huge portfolio. I mean, if they don't have a season this year, they're still making money somewhere. Right, they're still going to make money on other things. I mean, they would like to play this year, but
not as much money though.
I think you underestimate
how much they love money. Like, they really don't want to miss out on any.
Sure,
money.
But if you can crush
like a Scrooge McDuck vault,
if you can crush the union and have a system that works for your favor even more so, then it might be worth a year to
do. Think that this union head like leadership is much more resolute. They've definitely seemed that way. And not only that, you know, as toxic as a lot of social media is, it does seem to be playing as a pretty powerful tool for the players. I've seen them swinging a lot more opinions by just being vocal constantly on places like Twitter.
I'm like finding out that players have Twitters, you know, like players who I haven't thought of in years, who I had no clue would be on social media, right? Like Luis Guillorme is all of a sudden being like, wow, nice bargaining session, bro.
I'm like, let's go, based Alex Wood. Let me hear what you have to say, brother. I think, Chris, I think that these owners are not as liquid as they would have you believe. And I think that losing an entire season would hurt, you know, not the Steve Cohens of the world, but there are, you know, a handful of owners whose net worth is allegedly less than $1 billion, not factoring in their increased franchise value or whatever. And, you know, the league is not, in my view, in a position to just like punt on an entire season of revenue.
Don't get me wrong. I think it's stupidity and it's financial suicide to do what they could propose to do. I'm just saying is that there's the Steve Cohens of the world could hold out, right? And they could have a lot more say in a boardroom than the lesser teams who, right? I mean, I'm a Montreal Expo fan, right? And I saw what they did about, you know, the contraction and over the years of just, they don't, the little peon teams, they don't really care too much. It's the Mets and the Red Sox and the Yankees and all the stuff that are running, you know, that have more of a sway, I would think.
I still think though that teams that do make money, but you know, aren't, again, super liquid, like Bobby and Alex mentioned, you know, people like Mark Ananasio, you know, or you know, Bob Castellani, wouldn't be able to survive stuff like that. You know, owners like the Brewers or the Reds that aren't, you know, big market teams, but still do make money and aren't insanely liquid, that, you know, we could lose teams in theory if we do miss a season in total.
Right. It's also coming on the backs of COVID, right? Where we just, and here's what the Rob Manfred pitch is to owners and why they love him, despite the fact that he goes up and fumbles the bag literally every time he has a microphone in front of him. He says, your investment is going to go up. Come with me. Your stock is going straight to the moon, no matter what. And if they have
no matter what I tell the press either.
Right. Yeah, that's what he says to them.
Yeah, no matter what I say about it in the press, no matter how much crap that I have to go up there and eat every single time that a reporter asks me even the most basic question in the entire world. And I think that there would be a lot of owners would be like, wait, why are we doing this? We're making so much money. Why are we missing out on a whole season? They're not going to crush the players union. That's not going to happen without, you know, multiple years of no baseball. And at that point, like, what are we even doing this for? Like, we have to have baseball at some point. This will end at some point. Both sides know that. And I think that, like Alex said, like, if your strategy as a union is to stand resolute and draw a line and signal to the other side, this is our line for this time around. And if circumstances change next time around, so be it. But right now, to get us to come back to work, which you know you need, as all owners and capitalism need, is the workers to come in and actually do it, then this is what you're going to have to give us. And it's just a matter of which side blinks first. And we're still kind of in the holding pattern to see which side will.
Well, I mean, today was a really interesting day because we kind of saw these barbs shot back and forth across the table, right? MLB said, if you want a full season, we're going to have to get a CBA negotiated by the 28th. And the players said, if you want expanded playoffs, we're going to need a full season. And I think that, like, you know, we've talked a lot about expanded playoffs and kind of what it would mean for the sport and how much the owners want it. And maybe it's been overstated at times, but it's still a huge bargaining chip. It's still a big card that the players have in their hand. And it was almost heartening to see them, like, weaponize it today, right? Even if it's just posturing, right? Even if it's just making statements to the press, I think kind of putting that pressure on them, putting the heat on the owners a little bit is going to make a difference, because we saw how COVID, you know, quote unquote, destroyed their profits, right? How financially, the financial straits that they were in as a result of no fans in the stadiums.
Well, hopefully the MLB PA gets something out of it, because the NFL union had the 17th game, and I don't think they got much out of that because the owners got what they wanted, right?
Baseball's
the
extra stronger game, though.
Oh, let's hope so, right? I'm just saying, yes. I mean, at the end of the day, it is a huge bargaining chip. I get why they want 14. The more teams in, the more money they can make in the postseason. That's great. If they can get something out of it, I will be honest, I'm actually more optimistic of Bobby and Alex talking about this, that it will happen now, and then Brian will be wrong again.
I want to be wrong. I really want to be wrong. I cannot stress that enough.
That would be great.
What can we do as fans to really help the situation out? Do you guys think?
Don't buy MLB subscription.
Yeah, it's a tough question, because, you know, there's not games that you could not be going to, you know? So as fans, what can you do?
Yeah, boycott.
I canceled the auto renewal of my MLB TV. Obviously, like, when the lockout ends and they have MLB TV back, like, I will just pay it again. But I think that there are little things like that where you can just kind of, like, express your distaste. Not that it really even matters to these 30 billionaires until they start missing games and start not being able to cash TV checks or anything like that. But, you know, I think as fans, like, to be honest, I think that the best thing that fans can do is just have a clear head about all this stuff and, like, not carry water for the owners. Other than that, I mean, fans are kind of left out of this. They're like, we talk about this a lot on the podcast, is like, yeah, it's reasonable that fans will feel alienated by these discussions because it's so far removed from the rest of society because of how much money is pumped into baseball. But that's, I think that a lot of fans, you know, they misassociate that towards the players just want so much money, and that's why everything is so expensive.
Because the fandom is for the players, not the owners, right? They wear the players on their back instead of, you know, Steve Cohen on the back, right? I mean, there's,
well, speak that's, for that's, yourself.
Well, fair enough, right? But I mean, yeah, I mean, it sucks because as a fan, you just sit on the sidelines waiting for these. And on top of it, we're still in a pandemic, even though most people are tired of it. There's still a pandemic going on, right? And these guys are arguing about billions of dollars, and it's very hard for the average fan to relate to a lot of this stuff. It just goes over your head, and you just go, well, get it done and play some baseball again. That's all the fans really want.
To be absolutely honest, I think that the number one thing that fans can do to show solidarity in baseball is show solidarity with minor leaguers, above all else, because they're the ones that need it most. And like that is the most similar to the average American or Canadian or average baseball fans experience, is the experience of a minor leaguer. But I don't know, Alex, do you think that there's anything else that like fans should be doing in this moment other than just kind of like responsible consumption of what's actually happening here?
Like, can we sway the you know, the tides of how the negotiations are going? Like, no, not really. But like, not to be the reach across the aisle guy, but like, I think fans talking with each other is a huge part of this, you know, like actually, I mean, the discourse that I've seen online, right? Twitter is not real life, et cetera, et cetera. But actually seeing fans engage with players, engage with each other and say, wait, why are you fighting for this? What is really at stake here? And why should I as a fan care about this? Like, that's huge, because the status quo for decades has been they are millionaires and billionaires and they play a game for a living. And so why should I care? Right. And so even taking some of these things that we've talked about today back to your you know, conservative uncle or your, a D-bag coworker, whatever it is.
Or just like your baseball political agnostic, you know, who's just like, I don't care, just get them on the field. Like that, right. That is a sort of like nefarious element of fandom too.
The just play yes. Already, guys. Yeah,
right.
I know.
I'd play for free. Why are they arguing over this money? Right.
Well, and even, until
if you see someone on Twitter, like a player who's tweeting about, you know, the MLBPA positions, be like, hey, way to stand up for worker rights, right? Like just like affirm their position to show them that
I mean it is a union.
Believe in them, because you know the vast majority of us are workers.
Yeah,
it's absolutely right. It's something that Michael Bauman said on our podcast when we first had him on to do our very first State of Labor in Baseball. I believe this was 2020, before the pandemic, before we knew any of this crazy stuff was going to throw several wrenches repeatedly into all of this discourse. But he was like, this is just what your boss is doing to you with a couple zeros added at the end. And it's not anyone's fault who's at the table on the player's side that there are billions of dollars in this industry. That is like a structural, societal level capitalism systemic problem that there's that much money there and not
monopoly
that much money
in
other places. Yeah, exactly. Which, by the way, the owners had a huge hand in, both in their political lobbying and in their financial entrenchment. So, you know, it is hard. It is hard as a fan to just kind of like feel really powerless, but it's not like that different from the rest of our lives.
Honestly, at the end of the day, all I'm asking for, and it's not much, is somewhere in this agreement, whenever they figure this out, is just add the Montreal Expos back to the Major League Baseball and we'll all be fine.
On that hopeful note, Alex and Bobby, thanks very much for joining us. So folks, maybe if you want to plug, I mean, you made the natural plug for the show, but plug away.
I mean, we are Tipping Pitches wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Overcast, whatever it is. We are there in your feeds. We're also on Twitter, arguably much more often on Twitter. At Tipping,
maybe too often.
Pitches.
Mostly me. It's mostly my fault if we're on Twitter too often. Tipping.
If you see a thread, you know who it is. I'm just.
Yeah, you're gonna get the bench jockeys bump here. Let me tell you.
Yeah. It's gonna skyrocket. All 10 of our followers.
Hey! Could be 15 now.
Ten people are 10 people. You have to. Fair. 10 people tell 10 other people.
That's
and then look
right.
Where you're at.
That's how it goes.
And all of a sudden you're on the bench jockeys.
Also, can I quickly plug, our merch, which a lot of the profits go to minor leaguers. We have merch that says Unionize the Miners in several different inspired fonts and designs. And that is at tiny.cc/nationalize. And you can, you know, peruse that and buy whatever you think you like. And the profits will that from that go to More Than Baseball, which is an organization that
we will hyperlink to that in the show notes for this show.
That is awesome.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
Well, thanks,
thank you guys for having us.
Our pleasure.
Huge pleasure for us. Yeah, thank you.
Get on radio, guys. You guys are awesome.
Our foot's in the door.
Strike three. You're out.